It's episode 23 of Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast. Let's go! And today we're heading somewhere completely different, out into the open water and into the world of super yachts. I'm joined by Duncan Biggs, a chef with over 30 years' experience cooking at sea, travelling the world and feeding everyone from crew to billionaires. We chat about how he fell into yachting, what life is really like on board and why planning, precision and a love of adventure are essential if you want to make it in this unique part of the industry. So if you've ever wondered what it's like to cook in some of the most remote and luxurious environments on the planet, this one's definitely for you. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and come right on in. Hello and welcome to Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast, hosted as ever by me, Phil Street. Now, we're going to do, we're going into a new world, really, that we haven't explored on the podcast before, and that is into the world of yachts from within the culinary perspective. We're not going to talk about navigation and all of that nonsense. But in any case, it is a great pleasure to welcome to the show Duncan Biggs.
Yeah, hi. So been in yachting for about 30 years now, and it's a fantastic industry for chefs. Really, really good. You get to use the best produce and you get paid lots of money. So that's pretty good.
I mean, great. We'll just leave it there. Thanks very much for coming on the show. It's super. how are you anyway? And where do we find you today?
Really good. So we're based in Antibes and Monaco. So I have a company which I have with my business partner, Mark. It's called Ocean Wave Monaco. So we're a training company for yacht crew. And mainly one of the big things, how I got into it, was we developed requested by the MCA, the Maritime Coast Guard Agency, was to do an examination for chefs to work on vessels, to work in yachting and other parts of the maritime world. And that's called the Ship's Cook Certificate. So that was about nearly 10 years ago when that happened and we developed that examination. So that's how I've, you know, got into this area. But still, I've been working for 30 years for many different millionaires, billionaires, cooking on vessels anywhere between 30 metres up to 165 metres. So big yachts, lots of experience in the industry. So 10 years ago, I also started a training company, mainly for chefs, but we've developed into other parts of training for yacht crew.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, I've got something a little close to home with regards to this as well. My sister-in-law actually now works as steward, front of house, on yachts out of Palma, Mallorca.
Yeah. And another great base.
Yeah, no doubt. And in fact, she's just not long out of a cracking contract through winter, which was a yacht that was based there for the entire winter. So she actually worked Monday to Friday and got the weekends off.
It does happen occasionally.
When you
get those things. But when you're working and it's full up, like it's summertime, some yachts might stay, depending on their schedule, might stay in the winter, either in France or Spain or Italy. Those are the main places. But they sometimes do dual seasons. So they go across the Atlantic, sort of at the end of the summer season in France or around here. And then they go over to the United States, mainly to the Caribbean. And you end up having dual season boats as well.
Superb. Yeah. What a life. Of course, it's so easy. There's no hard work involved or anything like that, right? So
none at all.
No. And anybody who, maybe some people listening to this as well, might have seen the Below Deck documentary. Is it a documentary?
Yes.
I don't even know if it is a documentary.
Less said the better.
No, yeah,
it's not that.
No.
Seems to be so scripted and stuff. I think there's flashes of that in some, you know, some parts of the industry, but most of it's just scripted, and it's definitely not the standard experience that I've had within yachting. Yeah. You've got very professional crew, and absolutely, you know, you do get to see the world, and things have changed in the 30 years I've been in there. We used to just sort of like do what we used to call the meal run. You'd go to be in France, you'd go down to Spain, or you do Saint-Tropez, those sort of things. But in my career, I've done the Northwest Passage, we've done Alaska, we've been down to New Zealand, been to Australia, all over the planet. And nowadays, these super yachts are going into, are looking for far-flung places to go to for that experience. And as crew members, you're not just stuck in the galley, you end up going shopping in these different places. You get to see the places. Normally when the guests are on board, you're obviously working full out, but then when the guests depart, whether it's a charter boat or whether it's a private individual that you're cooking for, looking after, then you go on, you might get some time off, be in Tahiti, be in Fiji, as I said, New Zealand, and you get to see the world a little bit. So it's a great combination of two things as well, you know, the traveling and the camaraderie, you know, being with crew. You might be with 20 crew, 40 crew, 100 crew, and you get your own little cliques and things you go and do together. And, it, you know, when it works so well. And it's a great team to be. If you're on a great boat, you get a great team, you know, all the way from being captain, coming all the way down to, you know, stewardesses, steward, chef, engineers. And when you get that, when it clicks and it goes right, it's I've had a brilliant time in yachting. I really have.
I should hope so. 30 years. If you hadn't been having a brilliant time, then God, you are a glutton for punishment.
But it's, yeah, it's definitely, I think it's for any young chef coming into the industry, you can sort of like come in, and if you're sort of like talented or you want to work hard, you can either start on like a little 30 meter boat, and it's very much family, very family orientated. It's very sort of like family cooking in style, and you're going to be cooking for 6 to 7 crew as well as 6 to 8 guests. And then you could come on board and go straight onto like a 75 or even 190 meter yachts and work within a team of chefs. So you'll come on board as your sous chef, but then suddenly, you know, you can work up and become a sort of head chef on board as well. So you get to maybe start off looking after the crew, but then being involved with the head chef and maybe another chef to be dealing with guests and start facing guests as well. And then you'll be doing maybe barbecues on the beach, doing teppanyaki on the top of, you know, they've got these beautiful grills and outdoor spaces to do catering. And you could be catering for 2 people or be catering for 20 people. And it's well equipped. You get the best produce that money can buy. And, you know, we've just been doing an event at the moment with Wagyu beef and different types of like high-end produce. And you get these. You don't have to worry, You do have to worry about your budget. So I understand your budget, but the budget is so much more. Yeah. So when you have these products, you really don't have to do a lot with them. You just have to take care of them and cook them correctly.
Yeah, well, and before we even kind of switched the microphone on, you told me that you just had to do some Wagyu tasting. I was like, oh my God, what a hardship that must have been for you.
It's not about having an event place where we do our training, and we've got different suppliers coming in. So it's caviar as well, and just showing off to with the top chefs within the industry what can be provided to them. And you have many different suppliers, and as things have moved on, and we can have access to some amazing new produce that you probably wouldn't get or be allowed to have unless you're working in a Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah, no doubt. And you've sold me. I'm going to retrain. let's go. But no, I mean, what a great career. I mean, I spent the first part of my career on cruise ships, which is obviously not the same thing. But it's, I can imagine that environment is, you know, we're in a floating town full of people. Mm-hmm. Whereas you've got a tiny little floating village, basically, I suppose. Yes. But the intensity is still there because you don't have an escape, right? You have to be able to get on with the people that you work with.
100%.
But also logistically, you've got to think about things a little bit differently. You can't just you can't just nick to get some olives for the martinis, you know, if you happen to have run out. So I would imagine that planning is your friend in this environment.
It's like any business. You need preparation is everything. And I mean, when you turn around and you're in Europe, then it's a lot easier to get produce. You have these fantastic provisioning companies that will get fly things into you and you receive them and you've got other boats. But now the yachts are going off to unbeaten sort of places where Alaska, you know, going through the Northwest Passage, for example, going up to Svalbard, you know, up into sort of like people are now going to Antarctica and going to the Arctic in these places. So they're dealing with that. And because of that, you are having to think way ahead of the game and thinking about where you're going, how long you're doing. For example, the Northwest Passage, we had to plan different flights on small airplanes, particularly working out the menu. And then the day the ice would come a lot closer and you had to change a direction and go to a different place. So you're on the phone at that point, talking to the airline to try and reroute your provisions where they're coming in. So it's great fun. Yeah, a lot of work to go into it, but so exciting as well.
Yes. And rewarding, right? When you there's a misbalance of ratio between you know, people think you should just be able to walk into a job and it's easy and have a laugh.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt that there's moments where that is the case, but in actual fact, the biggest reward comes usually from the moments that are tough, and that, you know, you've got to put the graft in, but you get like people come into this industry for a reason, right? And one of the reasons has to be surely that you enjoy delivering good hospitality to people.
I think every job within the catering industry is hard. I don't think nobody would actually say it, but if you're actually in the industry, you know how hard it is. But again, it's I always say that the galley or the kitchen is Hogwarts. It's where the magic happens. Nobody knows outside of your department how it happens, but they want it to happen, and it does happen. And it's through hard work and planning and organisation and enjoyment and love of doing it. I mean, whether you're cooking for crew, you've got to enjoy cooking. Yes, we enjoy cooking for the billionaires, the millionaires, and cooking, you know, your Wagyu or your Kobe beef fillet or whatever you might be doing. But then also having the joy of when you're cooking for crew, that you make sure you end up giving them a nutritious, fun meal, but taking into those little moments where someone might be a Brazilian and it's a national day or in Brazil. And so looking for that recipe that's going to make them feel like they're at home. And that is also a fun and a great thing to be dealing with when you're actually working on the yachts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, happy crew, happy punter, yeah. Right? Or whatever you call them, passengers, guests, they're still guests.
Yes, yeah, definitely guests.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I mean, look, we kind of just got straight into this, but actually what I'd really also love to explore is kind of your background really and how you became a chef in the first place. So take us all the way back to the beginning.
It's 6-7 years old cooking with my mum and saying, oh, can I do this when I'm older? And she said, yes, you can be a chef. And then ever since then, I've wanted to be a chef. So 30, 40 years later, maybe I might make it at some point. So here's hoping anyway. I went to catering college, did all that, but then joined the Royal Navy. So I was in the Royal Navy for 5.5, 6 years, learned a hell of a lot. And because I'd already done my training, when I did my training within the Navy, I'd already done it 2 years previously. So that was, I passed with flying colours because I'd done it. And because of that, I ended up at a higher end cooking at Admiralty House, cooking in the Navy, in the sort of like cooking for officers. So I was very lucky in that situation. And that gave me a love of the sea, being away, enjoying, experiencing new places, new, everything new, that you don't get when you know, it's not like going on holiday to France or Spain, but when you go out to like Thailand or Southeast Asia, you get to see something that's completely different. And again, being a chef, it's new ingredients, new things and experiences that you're traveling. So by doing that, I fell in love with that and then moved on, came back out of came out of the Navy, spent some time in London, cooking in London, and then discovered yachting by accident. I was sort of headhunted for a 40-meter sailboat by, if you remember, Bristow Helicopters. So I mean, there was a fantastic guy.
I'm not up to date with my helicopter knowledge.
Mr. Bristow. And, well, Bristow Helicopters maintained all the helicopters for, I think, the oil rigs and within that industry. And he had a 40-meter sail yacht. And I got offered the job on there, ended up flying out. It was either staying in London or going out to the Bahamas. So I think I chose the right place.
I mean,
so went out to the Bahamas and away you go. But you do, I mean, nowadays, I mean, that was the rock and roll days when we first started. But lots of new training has taken place that people have to do now. So you would have remembered you would probably had to do your SDCW, which is your what your firefighting, what will you do if you abandon ship, what you do to do, you know, man overboard procedures, all these trainings. And you also have to have a medical as well, what we call an ENG1. So you need a medical, you need your SDCW, which is also your medical training as well. So once you've got those, unfortunately they do cost, but then the rewards within yachting are a lot better and you get good wages for what you have to do. And so you can quickly pay that back or reimburse yourself. So it's well worth the investment to go into that and get that training. If you're starting off as a chef, eventually if you're doing 10 or less crew, then you can just go into it. But if you do 10 or more crew, then you need to do a test called the Ship's Cook Certificate, which we run. There's my little sales pitch for today. But it's a standard and it's just making sure that you have it's based on the MVQ. It's based on having a 10% knowledge or an experience of understanding how you cook. And it's a good, what we like to do with your Ship's Cook Certificate is we also give lots of experience and a lot of been in the industry and give lots of information to new chefs coming into the industry of what to expect. So it's not just about doing the test, which is obviously a big part of it, but we also like to give lots of information of what you would expect being in the industry or what you should be looking for.
Do you know what? You just triggered a memory of the age 21, I did my first ENG1 medical, and I nearly failed it because I went out on the absolute raging. It's the night before.
And, it's not the first time.
Yeah, and you know the doc who was taking me through the medical, and I remember him going, "Okay, your blood pressure is really high, nearly on the point where I should probably fail you, but you're just under, so I can sign you off, but you have to come back next year and do another one rather than the two years. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, so there's a direct correlation between alcohol consumption and blood pressure then. Let's remember that one. So yes, never went out for a drink the night before a medical before ever again.
A good lesson to learn.
Yes, and learn early as well, which is good. My sea career nearly stopped before it even got started. But there we are. Yeah, but I mean, it's an interesting journey as well, because one going into the Navy, the perception would be, in terms of cooking at least, that you're not exactly at the standard of a super yacht and what a billionaire owner or a millionaire owner would want from you. So yeah, and then you went from the Navy into London. So how did you get into the fine dining space then? I suppose.
Well, I mean, I was, as I sort of described before, because I'd already done my City and Guild 705, 706, 1 and 2, all these things, and then going into the Navy, I did almost the first year training within the Navy. So I was very lucky when it came to that, and then London, worked at the Law Society, did several places, worked in the City of London, sort of directors dining, those sort of areas. And then because I was in that area, I was sort of talking to different agencies as well. And that's how I slipped into yachting, purely by accident, by someone putting my name forward for this yacht that I was working on. And I worked on there for a year, suddenly really discovered yachting and what you had to do. But again, that was the early earliest days of yachting where you didn't need your ANG1, you didn't need an STCW, it was just rock up and you're there. And then that came in a few years later. And then obviously now there's a lot of safety issues. The biggest shot that I knew then was about 60 meters. Now you're talking 100, 160, 170 meter yachts. And, you know, with anywhere between sort of like 80 to 90 crew on the really big ones, and 50 crew on a 115 meter yacht, for example, and then 20 crew on a 70, 75 meter yacht. So, and there's a lot of, there seems to be, the yachting is obviously just, they're building new yachts, getting bigger, and there's a great call for well-trained discipline, shall we say, chefs, and to be out there. So it's definitely an industry that it's worth getting into, and you can do well in.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're always, I suppose, trying to get one up on each other, right, until so the yachts just keep getting...
Yeah, exactly.
I remember being, it was actually Antibes, actually, we're on holiday once and seeing Abramovich's yacht in the harbour. And
that was one of the boats I worked on.
Was it really? Yeah. Maybe you were on it at the time. Who knows? But it was, there was a furore around it at the time, like people, because I think Chelsea at the time were playing the Super Cup, the European Super Cup final in Monaco.
Mm. Yeah.
So Abramovich had come down just for the crack. I suppose. Yeah. Why fly when you can come down in a stunner of a yacht? Yeah.
Yeah. Great person to work for. Absolutely great. Really, really nice guy.
Right. Yeah. But this is the feedback I've also had from my sister-in-law as well, is that I think there's probably a misconception, and I'm sure there are some really challenging people as well. But at the same time, like the vast majority of people that she has worked for, she said, are just really, you know, they're family people, and they just they want to deliver a good experience for anybody who comes on to the yacht, whether that is their family or their friends or whatever.
Yeah. That's it. And it's I think also one of the things you've got to learn as a chef, obviously there are times when the guests or the owners want to entertain, and then you're delivering that, you know, high-end experience. But there's sometimes someone just wants roast chicken, you know, and comfort food. Yeah. And you just want a simple salad. And I think that's very much, if you're in the industry and you're a chef, if you want to... you do have moments where you can shine and you can show your gift off to somebody, but you also have to realize that it's sometimes you're just cooking for somebody who wants a family meal, and you can't be, you know, that's what you got to do, you know. And you have so many different dietary requirements these days as well for different guests, different family members, and you have to adhere to those. I mean, back in the day, we never really thought about somebody was allergic to something. But nowadays, there's a lot of things, and you have to take it very seriously. And whether your choice, life choice, is being vegan or vegetarian or something like that. And, you know, you have to be able to be flexible enough to cook for these people and enjoy cooking for those people. You know, it shouldn't be, oh, I've got to do a vegan meal. It should be, oh, wow, what can I cook?
Yeah.
What can I make that's different? What can I make it shine? And it's got to shine, that meal or those meals that you're serving have got to look as equally as appetizing as those ones that you're giving to maybe the other guests as well.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a passion for the job.
And there's always a time and a place for beans on toast as well, right?
We all love beans on toast, don't we? And spaghetti hoops. Let's not forget spaghetti hoops.
Indeed, yeah. Beans and sausages. So I know my student days are coming back to my brain. But it's a really good point, though, because even if you just think about, like, your own experience if you're on holiday, certainly I'm putting myself in my own shoes here, but, you know, this sounds really almost trite, but, you know, by the time you've got to day 10, you're like, I don't want three courses of food. I just want something simple and light and nutritious, and that's kind of it.
And most of the time you've got to be thinking, even if you're doing, you know, as I mentioned before, you're doing the Caribbean season and then you're doing the, you know, the Med season, and you're in the sun. So you're going to want salads. You want some interesting and different, and you know, you want a challenge. You can't just put some lettuce out and a tomato and buffalo mozzarella salad. You've got to be putting these different sort of styles of things out there, so it, to make it interesting. But then you've suddenly got this thing where you're suddenly now going off to Alaska, or you're going down to Antarctica, and you've got to be able to produce things that are warming, you know, and it's different places. And you've also got to make, if someone's on board for 2 weeks, even longer sometimes, that you've got to make that exciting. It can't just be the same food. You've got to try, you know, are you going to put some food on connected to where you are, wherever you might be, not only for the guests, but for the crew. That is their day. What happens? I've gone for a run, I've been swimming, I've done that, but what's for lunch? And what's for dinner? You know, because it becomes entertainment in itself.
So you've got to be there for that. For sure.
Yeah.
No longer, but as soon as we finish breakfast in this house, we're already like what's for dinner? It's like always planning ahead. But it can be, and it usually is a very, very important part of somebody's experience on a holiday, or when they're relaxing or something like that, is what they're shoveling into themselves, as it were. But yeah, so I mean, the one thing I just wanted to explore with you, if you will permit us, is any stories from your time, shareable stories of like maybe the good, the bad, and the ugly of what you've experienced in your 30 years.
Yeah, well, I think there's the fantastic things where you've got famous people coming on the yacht, and you know, without mentioning too many names, but you have some Hollywood elites come on board and stuff, and you'll be, sometimes you are, as a chef, you're very much guest facing, that you're part of the entertainment, delivering, telling them what meal you produce for them, or doing teppanyaki, for example, and somebody's talking to you while you're doing teppanyaki, and you're like a swan, you know, you're just relaxed on the outside, but inside, you know, I've got to turn my steak over, I've got to do this, I've got to make that, but also answering the questions of those guests that you're dealing with. I think one of the funniest ones I ever, or people I ever met, was Helen DeGeneres, Ellen, and she was fantastic. She came in the galley, made everybody laugh, and she was just like she was on TV. So that was fantastic. One of my best ones, my real pleasure, was cooking for Sean Connery. Again, a real gentleman. And it's that was like a big wow for me. So yeah, you get to cook for some amazing people and see them in real life. And you know, again, you have to be, as like anybody in the hospitality industry, you know, be a bit reserved and, you know, be polite and do the bit where inside you're like screaming, "Oh my God, it's Sean Connery!" Yeah. Wow, you know. Yeah. So it's you know, that's been fun. But I'd say for anybody starting off in this industry, it's traveling to the, you know, amazing places. You know, going out into, you suddenly have to get into one of the speedboats and go shopping in, you know, Amalfi Coast, New Zealand, Australia, you know, the islands, Tahiti, Fiji. And yeah, it's those nights when you go out, maybe the guests have left and you go out with a few of the crew for a few drinks, and you're coming back late at night on one of these little speedboat things, ribs or whatever it might be, and the stars are shining, the moon's out, and you're whizzing across the water, a flat warm water in the Caribbean. Wow. Some of my best memories doing those sort of things. And I think the camaraderie with working with all the crew, those are the days that I really remember, or nights even. Yeah, there's a few nights I remember or don't remember now.
Well, it did. Yeah. But obviously, as long as you're taking care of your safety stuff and all of et cetera. But it sounds like an incredible career. You've obviously devoted the best part of your working life to it well, so obviously has something going for it. I would imagine, like everything, it's not for everyone as well. The intensity of enclosed surroundings can be something that people just don't get on with. We saw that on cruise ships. So I'd imagine that's pronounced even more in a smaller environment perhaps, but nevertheless, Just the opportunity. I'm quite intrigued, actually. What did Sean Connery eat?
I actually can't remember what we did, but it was, I mean, like I said, that was in the Bahamas on a, I think it was on a, yeah, 55 meter vessel. And he was just a fun person to be around. He would walk on the boat. He would say hello to every crew member. It was Christmas time, I think. And so he came on board and it was just the way he was. The rest of the guests would come on board, give you a quick nod, quick hello, and they'd go. He stopped and said hello to every crew member. And that was just fantastic. It was that's what I remember from that. But yeah, no, absolutely, like I said, brilliant experience.
Yeah. If it was the Bahamas, he was probably eating mahi-mahi or something like that, right? or whatever the local fish. I'm about to head to Barbados, actually, in 2 weeks' time, and I am dreaming of mahi-mahi. I absolutely love that fish.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's it. The other thing is, like say, we've just been cooking some Arctic char today, and it's all these different types of, you know, fish that you get, or the different types of provisions that you get from around the world. And, you know, simple thing like vanilla in Tahiti, and you get it from the source, and it, you know, you get these, you know, vanilla beans, and they're like maybe a bit dried up when you buy them in a supermarket somewhere. But here, we're there, you know, you've actually picked them off the vine, you know, or you've just received them. And that's the passion. That's the fun part of it. Yeah. Seeing those sort of things.
Totally. And from a chef's perspective, like that's the dream, isn't it? Like you wake up somewhere different every day and you get the opportunity to get the produce of that area and play with it.
And remember, the commute from your cabin to the galley or kitchen, you know, is probably about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's 10 minutes because you've gone and got a coffee beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, I think my days in commuting in London before I started on yachts were, you know, taking a bus, taking a tube, walking around London. Absolutely really nice experience, but I think a 5 minute walk down a corridor, having a cup of coffee on the way there, and then you're in your office. That's pretty good as well. Pretty cool.
Yeah, can't be that. But yeah, no. Look, Duncan, thank you so much for coming and spending some time. I know you're a super busy man, and look forward to next time I'm in the south coast of France. I'll give you a look up.
And definitely, yeah, you come along. We've got a nice little chalet, nice swimming pool, a jacuzzi. But the best of all, I've got a pizza oven to die for. So come over and have a few glasses of wine.
Fantastic. What are you doing next week?
I'll send you your flight tickets. Well, you're off to the Bermuda or Bahamas or whatever.
Yeah, Barbados.
Barbados. Indeed. There you go. I knew it was a B.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice one. Cool. Look, thank you so much. Wish you guys all the very best with what you've got going on, and look forward to seeing you at some things, I'm sure.
Definitely. Stay in touch. Ciao. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Well, what a fascinating insight into a side of hospitality we don't often see, and what a career Duncan's had. From the Navy to super yachts, it's a reminder that there are so many different paths in this industry. A massive thanks to Duncan for sharing his story. We'll, of course, be back soon with another cracking conversation, but until then, take real good care of yourselves, and we'll catch you next time.